Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This episode contains adult themes and is not appropriate for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, the world. This is They Will Kill, a true crime podcast. I am Courtney Eck.
And I'm Sadie Eck.
And it's Sadie's night, and we had one of those weeks where we pre-loaded last week's episode, so I feel like it's been months since we talked to you people, because yes. On our end, it has been over a week. So it's good to be back, even though you don't know that.
Good to be back to you all again.
100%. What are you going to tell the people about today, Sadie?
Oh, boy. This is the terrible story of the Harrison family murders. I used 2 very well-done articles to help with the details of this case. The first is The House of Horrors, written by Michael Lista for the Toronto Life, and the other is Improbable Cause, written by Amy Dempsey for the Star. So on the morning of August 23rd, 2013, a housekeeper was busy cleaning one of her regular homes on a nice street in the suburban neighborhood of Mississauga, Ontario. She'd been there for 2 hours and was getting ready to head upstairs when she was interrupted by a knock at the door. When she answered, a man asked her if the owner of the home, Caleb Harrison, was there. He had failed to show up for work that morning and wasn't answering his phone. They were worried about him and decided to send someone to check on Caleb. The housekeeper told the man that she didn't think Caleb was home, but she hadn't been upstairs yet. The two went up together and saw that Caleb's bedroom door was closed. When they opened the door, they found the 40-year-old divorced father of 2 lying in bed with the sheet pulled up to his chin.
Oh, God.
When they approached him, it was clear he was not sleeping and he was, in fact, dead. When paramedics arrived, one of them quickly realized that he'd been there before. Not just once, but twice. For 2 other suspicious deaths. The first call to 911 had come in April 2009 when 64-year-old Bill Harrison had been found unconscious in the downstairs bathroom by his wife, 63-year-old Bridget. When paramedics arrived, they found Bill dead and his cause of death was ruled as being from natural causes. And then, a year later, in April of 2010, one afternoon after school, Caleb's son found his grandmother dead at the bottom of the stairs leading to the front door.
What?
She had suffered from a broken neck, and the pathologist ruled her death as undetermined. They couldn't say for sure what had caused her fatal injuries. The years passed with no explanation as to what happened to Bill and Bridget. Their son Caleb did his best to live without his parents until his untimely death in August of 2013. When the paramedics made their way upstairs, they found Caleb in bed. He was clearly already gone. When they pulled the sheet back from his body, they found bruising and abrasions around his neck. His knuckles were swollen, and he had deep scratches across his chest. Knowing this was now a crime scene, they carefully backed out of the room to preserve any evidence and called police to come investigate. The Harrison family story begins back in the 1940s, when Bill and Bridget were born. Bridget was a bright girl and loved the theater. In the early 1960s, when she was 16, She landed an apprenticeship at Stratford's internationally renowned Performing Arts Theater in Stratford, Ontario. Soon after starting her apprenticeship, Bridget met Bill backstage at the Stratford Theater Festival. He was a costume designer, tall, handsome, and only 2 years older than Bridget. The two quickly fell for each other. Bill was described as, quote, athletic and handsome, with a magnetic smile and a taste for car racing and jazz.
Yeah, Bill.
They make my heart flutter.
I want a taste for car racing and jazz.
I know. You'll have to see pictures of this family man, Court. It's just like...
He's a costumer. He likes jazz and car racing and costuming.
Yes.
Costume design. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So Bill, quote, had grown up in Stratford in a household of musicians and jazz enthusiasts. His father ran Harrison's Beauty Parlor, which was a business launched by Bill's great-grandparents after they escaped slavery in Virginia.
What?
And made their way to Canada on the Underground Railroad in 1837.
Oh, I have chills.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah. Some people are just built for greatness. Just amazing. Amazing.
Yes. Actual angel people. Yep. So as a biracial couple, Bill and Bridget faced their fair share of racism, but this did not stop them from falling deeply in love. They married in 1969 and moved to Mississauga. Bridget took a role in a popular TV show called Act Fast, which I wanted to look up. I didn't have time, but I just can only imagine what this Canadian Act Fast show was about.
Oh, yeah.
She would eventually change her career path to become a teacher. Over the years, she worked her way up as the principal of the school and then the superintendent, and would eventually work as the special assistant to the education minister. When she retired, she became a member of the local school board where she once worked. Bridget was well-loved by her students and colleagues. When she died, more than 1,000 people came to her funeral to show their condolences.
Wow.
And when one of the people speaking that day asked how many careers she had influenced, more than half the people in the room raised their hands.
Ugh.
Bill worked as an executive for Sobeys, which is a Canadian grocery store, and volunteered as a big brother and a little league baseball coach. He was known for his beautiful gardens and his way with plants. They wanted a family of their own but were unable to get pregnant, so they made the decision to adopt their son Caleb, who joined them in 1973 when he was just 6 months old. Mm. Bill and Caleb were extremely close. Bill called Caleb his best friend.
Ugh.
And when you see the three of them together, it's... When I found out that Caleb was adopted, I was just shocked because he looks exactly like both of his parents. It's crazy.
Wild.
Yeah. Exactly like them. It, especially his dad, but like totally looks like his mom too. I was
meant
really surprised.
To be. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's like Laura's, my wife's brother. Well, she has a half brother who is half black. His father was black, and everybody remarks how much he looks like his adoptive white father because yeah. Both of her parents have the exact same smile. It's really mm-hmm. wild, the exact same mouth. And so the entire family has this big, giant, mm-hmm. distinctive smile. But people all the time are like, God, you look just like your dad. He's like, well,
he
that's
really
interesting.
Does. It's so funny.
Yeah. We're not related biologically. Yep. <Right.
laughs> As a kid, Caleb was said to have, quote, insatiable energy and a tendency to find trouble.
Yeah, baby.
His aunt Elizabeth said, quote, he was a little rascal, dangerously curious.
Mm-hmm.
And his cousin remembered Caleb by saying, quote, there was no shortage of near heart attacks for any adult who was watching him. Caleb had Tourette syndrome and struggled in school. This was hard for Bridget, who expected her kid to excel at something that's so important to her. But Bill was the peacekeeper between them and reminded Bridget that their job was to love him and help him find his way through life, something they both did even when Caleb was an adult. The Harrison house was the place where people would gather. Bill and Bridget were warm, smart, and very funny. Their friends would often tease that they should start charging a consulting fee because everyone went to them for both career, relationship, and parenting advice.
Mm-hmm.
When Caleb got older, he started working in the warehouse for My Favorite Doll, which is a company that claims to be the number one fashion doll retailer in Canada.
Hell yeah.
So in 2000, Caleb, who is now 27, met a new coworker, 19-year-old Melissa Merritt. The two quickly fell in love and were inseparable. Coworkers who knew them both said they would constantly be caught making out in Caleb's car before and after work on their And on their lunch break, Caleb would sometimes playfully grab Melissa so she couldn't get away, and then he'd fart. So she was forced to endure the stink.
It's true love. True love.
So when Melissa eventually got fired from her job after not showing up for a shift, Caleb quit in solidarity. The two would quickly marry, and during their first 3 years of marriage, they would have two kids, a boy and a girl. Caleb was a loving father, but sadly the marriage between Caleb and Melissa couldn't hold up to the stress that comes with it. The two started fighting, and in 2005, Caleb was arrested after hitting Melissa during an argument.
Oh, no.
Caleb spent 3 nights in jail for assault, and after he was released, the two separated. Melissa stayed in their house with the kids, and Caleb moved in with his parents in his childhood home. Soon after the separation, in July of 2005, Caleb was invited to a house party with some friends. He agreed to go and told his buddy that he'd be the designated driver. One of the conditions of his release from jail was to stay away from alcohol. When Caleb drank, he got mean and unruly. It's said that he wouldn't have hit Melissa sober, but alcohol changed him.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not that drinking is an excuse for hitting people. That's not okay.
Yep.
After getting to the party, Caleb changed his mind and decided to have just one beer, which he could usually handle better. But over the course of the night, one beer turned into lots and lots of drinks.
Mm-hmm.
When the party ended, Caleb was so drunk, his friends refused to drive home with him and decided to walk home instead. Unfortunately, Caleb decided to drive. Soon after leaving, his car drifted over the center line of the road, and he hit a taxi with four men inside, head-on, killing the driver instantly.
Oh, God, no.
Both cars caught on fire, but those who heard the crash were able to pull the men from the cars. Caleb only suffered a broken leg, but was otherwise unharmed. The men in the other car weren't so lucky. Mm. The driver was killed. The others suffered broken limbs, broken backs, and one of them suffered a terrible head laceration. Terrible. I'm not going to go into the details, but
yeah,
bad. Laceration makes it sound tame.
Right.
Caleb was arrested and charged with impaired driving, causing death and bodily harm. He was let out on bail with strict orders to stay on house arrest. Melissa was furious about the crash and believed this was proof that Caleb was an unfit father. Caleb wasn't happy with Melissa either and accused her of being a pathological liar. He told the custody judge that Melissa had a history of lying and once told her family that she had ovarian cancer, letting her friends and family believe that she was seriously ill for months, when in reality she knew it was only a cyst.
What?
Mm-hmm. A few weeks after Caleb's crash, Melissa called police and accused Caleb of attacking her in her backyard. When they found Caleb at his parents' house, they realized it wouldn't have been possible for Caleb to attack Melissa. He was still mostly bedbound from the injuries from the crash and could barely get around on his crutches.
Hmm.
During their divorce hearing, the judge decided to give Caleb and Melissa 50-50 custody, while Caleb awaited trial for his drunk driving charges, which would end up being postponed for more than 3 years.
Wow.
So during this time, both Caleb and Melissa fell in love with other people that they'd met online. Caleb's new girlfriend had two children from a previous relationship, and she said one of the things that she loved most about Caleb was how he treated his kids and hers too. He was kind, loving, always willing to listen and talk things through with them. Mm. And, you know, Caleb obviously didn't have his shit together real well, but everything I read was he was a very, very good dad.
Yeah.
Really loved his kids, and it mattered a lot to him because of his adoption.
Right.
Just wanting to make sure that he had a good relationship with them. So Melissa fell in love with a man named Chris Vittori, who is 6'4" and, quote, built like a linebacker.
Ooh.
He was raised in an Italian neighborhood in North Toronto, and after high school, he worked as a Hooters kitchen manager, nightclub bouncer, and handyman. He tried beauty school but dropped out.
Oh my God, I wish this giant man is a hairdresser.
Huge. Yes. I mean, he's a humongous guy.
He's like, I'm going to be a bouncer. I'm going to work at a Hooters. And then, you know what? I want to express my creative side. I think I'm going to do hair. Like, right? Yes, 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 yes. More. Yes. 100% that.
Yes. He would have been a happier guy if he had just stuck with beauty school.
Ugh.
Chris had a tattoo that ran the length of his arm that read, quote, only the strong will survive.
Yikes.
He was not someone you wanted to mess with. Despite the fact that Caleb and Melissa were still technically married, she and Chris had a wedding ceremony in the spring of 2007, and Melissa soon gave birth to their first daughter together.
Wow.
They would go on to have three more kids over the next few years. Chris was described as a good dad and was kind to his stepchildren, too. He adored Melissa and was known to be very protective of her. It was no secret that he absolutely loathed Melissa's ex-husband, Caleb. Mm-hmm. Chris believed Caleb was nothing but a spoiled rich kid. He made it a priority to do all he could to ensure Caleb went to trial for his drunk driving charges and hoped for a long prison sentence.
Oof. He's still a father. That sucks, those poor kids.
And Caleb was in his mom's Mercedes when he crashed and killed those people. Mm. And so that just added like another layer of the spoiled rich kid sort of thing.
Yep.
He created a Facebook page and tried to gather 100,000 signatures in support of his mission.
God. I mean, so I think he deserves to, you know, whatever. There need to be consequences for his actions. But I just think about Caleb's children living with this new man who's actively going after their father.
Yes.
That's fucked up.
Yes. And gets, I mean, like, the levels of fucked up we're getting into here in a minute. I mean, like, three of Bill, Bridget, and Caleb are all dead, and we can imagine what happened, right?
Yeah.
Like I mean, yes. I think that it would be very difficult to be a step parent, and I think it would be very difficult to have a spouse that you love have an ex that you hate. Like, yes. I think that is common, unfortunately, and I think it's probably very challenging, but you also have to do whatever you can to protect your children.
Absolutely.
And part of that is to continue to let them, if there's no reason not to, to let them have a relationship with their other parent.
Yes.
That's very important.
Yeah.
Right? And there was no indication that Caleb was in any way a danger to his kids. As the years passed, things between the two families grew to hateful levels. Melissa's mistrust and dislike didn't stop at Caleb. She felt the same way towards his parents. Bill and Bridget helped Caleb with his kids, and if he couldn't watch them, they'd step in and help. Melissa felt like Bridget was interfering, and she resented having to consider their schedules too. At one point, the judge overseeing the custody of the kids told Caleb and Melissa to only communicate through letters. Melissa started accusing Bridget of being the one who wrote Caleb's letters, and Melissa made 5 unsubstantiated claims that Caleb or his parents had hit and abused her kids. These were not true.
Mm-hmm.
There was never any evidence to back up these claims. Melissa started keeping the kids full-time despite the court order of 50-50 custody. When Caleb took her to court for his share of custody, the judge ordered her to continue to share the kids and told the Harrisons to call police if she denied them access again. She was just like, mine, they're mine now. You don't get to have them. Melissa and Chris were furious. They even made faces and stuck their tongues out at Caleb and his parents after the hearing was over.
Wow.
On March 9th, 2009, Caleb finally went to trial for the charges brought against him for driving while impaired. He was found guilty for 1 count of impaired driving causing death and 3 counts of impaired driving causing bodily harm. The judge sentenced him to 18 months in prison. Melissa assumed she would now have full custody of their kids, but Bill and Bridget petitioned the court to stand in for Caleb's half of his custody while he was in prison, and the judge agreed.
Mm-hmm.
6 weeks later, on April 16th, Bridget came home late from a school board meeting. The house was dark and quiet. When she called out to Bill, he didn't answer, so she searched the house and found the downstairs bathroom door locked. She used a pin to open the lock and found her husband lying on the floor inside.
Ugh, God.
He wasn't breathing. He was cold to the touch, and she told the 911 operator his body was very stiff.
Ugh.
He was found with blood pressure medicine and painkillers near him. The officer who responded to the call, who also happened to be a rookie, determined Bill had died suddenly with no signs of foul play.
Oh, no. Don't do it, officer.
Bill received a, quote, non-forensic autopsy by a, quote, community-based pathologist.
Oh, my God.
Who had no special training or certification in advanced postmortem. And so this, I'm going to cover another case that I came across while researching this one that talks a lot more in detail about what I'm getting ready to talk about. But so most pathologists are trained to examine people who are still alive. But what? Forensic, so yeah, a pathologist.
Uh-huh. Okay, got it.
Like they go in and they look at somebody who's alive and say, okay, this is what happened or whatever. So like children, a lot of times a pathologist, if there's suspected abuse or something, they'll come in and look at the child's body and just to try to determine if it's like normal bumps and bruises, right, or abuse.
Right.
So, but a forensic pathologist, they're the ones in Canada who are trained to examine people who are dead.
Got it.
But Canada didn't start training people in forensic pathology until the mid-2000s.
Wow.
Whoopsie-daisy.
Yeah.
So this is going to throw a lot of wrenches in this case. Mm-hmm. So despite the fact that Bill was found to have a fractured sternum and bruises on his head, face, and neck, the pathologist decided that he had died of cardiac arrhythmia, which means that the heart stopped beating but doesn't explain why. Sternum. His sternum was broken.
Yeah. That's
they also...
Your heart attack exploded through your chest bone, bro.
Right? No. And they were like, oh, it was CPR, but nobody did CPR on Bill. He was very clearly dead when Bridget found him.
So strange. It's just so strange that things that seem so obvious like that get overlooked.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Big time.
It's concerning.
Yes, very concerning. Well, and when I started to think about what this means for death investigations in Canada, and I'm sure in general, like, this isn't just a Canadian problem.
Yeah.
But, like, how many people got away with murder because the pathologist was like, meh, looks like bruising from a fall in the bathroom that broke your sternum?
Yeah.
Yeesh. No.
Yeah. I mean, we get a lot of cases like that. And I saw somebody sent us the CNN, well, it was a Patreon story about the first responder to the Oklahoma City bombing who was later found dead, like having been stabbed multiple times and then like, a mile out into a field. And they're like, suicide.
Right. Right.
Case closed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And why wasn't there an investigation? You know, because the idea with that one is that it was a cover up because he knew something about the Oklahoma City bombing that they didn't want out and blah, blah, blah. Well, even if it wasn't a conspiracy, even if that's not true, why was there not an investigation into why this man, quote unquote, committed suicide by stabbing himself, 11, 12 times and then walking
There's no
a mile into a field.
Weapon either, right? Yeah.
Right. No weapon. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Exactly. I don't like it. I don't like it.
No. And a rookie cop shouldn't be able to come in and be like, nah, nope, nothing to see here, everybody. So it's important to know that before his death, Bill was fit and healthy. He had no history of heart disease. The pathologist found no abnormalities in Bill's body that would explain why he died from seemingly natural causes. Mm. Despite this, 5 days after his death, Bill was cremated and buried.
Oh my God.
Any chance of reexamining his body for more evidence was now gone. As Bridget dealt with the tragic death of her husband, she had no idea that in the days leading up to his death, her grandkids had been telling their teachers they were going on a trip with their mom and stepdad.
Oh, I have chills. I have entire chills. Mm. Oh, no. Mm.
On the day Bill died, Chris and Melissa packed up their home, dyed their kids' hair, and disappeared.
Mm-mm. Time to talk about our other BFF, HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get farm-fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip the trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit.
With the cost of groceries going up and up and up, now is the perfect time to get started with HelloFresh. HelloFresh is cheaper than grocery shopping and 25% less expensive than takeout. HelloFresh has 40 weekly recipes to choose from for all meal occasions, lifestyles, and preferences. Take your pick from meals like soy glazed salmon with rice, or mushroom and chive risotto.
That is actually delicious. I had that one recently. Just this morning, Laura and a friend of mine and I were talking, and my friend does not like to cook, and Laura does not like to cook. She's just not good at it. And she was saying, but I cook for my wife all the time using HelloFresh because it's easy, it's delicious, she can do it, it's easy to follow the steps of the recipes, and it always turns out good. So all levels of experience can use HelloFresh, and it is delicious. It just, it makes life so, so much easier. I cannot tell you.
Go to HelloFresh.com/theywill60 and use code theywill60 for 60% off plus free shipping.
That is HelloFresh.com/theywill60 and use code theywill60 for 60, you guys, percent off plus free shipping.
Do it.
Yes, do it. You won't regret it. It'll make your life better and more delicious.
Bridget was frantic about her missing grandchildren and thought it was incredibly suspicious that the whole family would leave the area the same day that Bill died.
I can't do it.
And the day after Bill's funeral, Bridget was in front of a judge who granted her temporary full custody of her grandchildren who were still missing.
Oh, my God. And her, so her son is in prison at this point, right?
Yes.
So, oh, no. God, yep. Poor Bridget. I can't.
I know. So Caleb's in prison. Bill is dead. Her grandkids have been abducted from her.
Oh, my God.
Yes. And nobody's investigating her husband's death. It would later be revealed that despite the fact that officers from the same department worked very briefly on Bill's death and the parental abduction case, so the same officers in the same building were working on these two cases, they never talked to each other about how the cases might be related.
I just have to go to sleep now. I just have to go night. I can't.
Right. And it wasn't like Bridget didn't put the two pieces together. I mean, she was very clear. Like, hello. Oh, they ran away the same day my husband was killed. Like, please.
Well, and as an officer, you would think that would be like a slam dunk. You'd be like, sweet, this case is very clear. We're going to solve this one real nicely. But they're But wait, guys, should we go talk to Dave? He's like 50 feet down the hall.
I can't stand up to look over the cubicle into his cubicle, so no, I'm not going to do it.
Dave's literally on the other side of the cubicle. He's like, you guys talking about me? He's like, don't worry about it.
No, don't worry. I'm tired. I can't raise my voice to another decibel higher.
No, but you guys figure something out that I should know? You have any questions about what I investigate? It's fine.
No.
I got to go. I got to get Jimmy John's.
Right.
I mean, Tim Hortons. That's my Canadian reference.
I got to go to my favorite doll store.
Can I go pick up my dolls?
So the pathologist also said if he had known at the time that there was a custody issue when Bill died, he would have considered his death suspicious and would have triggered a much more thorough investigation. So 2 months passed with Bridget facing life on her own, but that would change in June of 2009 when Caleb was suddenly released from prison for good behavior after only serving 3 months of his 18-month sentence.
Wow. I mean, yeah, I guess that's the maths in that case, but...
I guess. It's so fast.
Like, anyone can behave for 3 months. Like,
right, exactly. Yeah. My heart really goes out to the families affected in that crash.
Big time. That
doesn't feel real justice-y to me.
No.
5 more months passed until finally police found Melissa and Chris. They had moved to Nova Scotia, which is more than 800 miles away. Chris had assumed a new name, and Melissa gave birth to their second child while there.
Wow.
The only reason they were caught is because Chris used his real name on a rent check that he'd sent to his landlord. So 7.5 months after they disappeared, Melissa was arrested on November 27th and was charged with parental abduction. God. She was released on bail, but under the strict orders to have no contact with Caleb or their two kids. And again, like, these kids, man. And their names are not available, and I'm really glad for that. They need to be protected.
Yep.
But, like, what in the world?
It's awful.
It's awful. Melissa's parental abduction trial was set for April 22nd, 2010. On April 10th, Caleb spotted Melissa and Chris sitting in their car in front of his house. This was a violation of Melissa's bail, and she was arrested again. Bridget planned to testify against Melissa at trial and had her victim impact statement ready. She talked about how Bill had died the same day as her grandchildren went missing, writing, quote, "Some people believe in coincidences, some do not."
Mm-hmm.
On April 21st, the day before trial, Bridget dropped her grandkids at school and then dropped Caleb off at work.
I'm scared.
When Caleb's kids returned home from school later that afternoon, they found their grandma's lifeless body at the bottom of the stairs.
Oh, these poor kids. Good God.
She was found fully dressed with her Crocs still on, lying face up with her arms to the sides of her body.
Oh, my God.
Supposedly, she fell down the stairs.
Right.
Crocs still on.
Yep.
Lying face up with her arms next to her body.
Yep. Doesn't sound like how people fall.
Her head was laying on the bottom step of the staircase. She had abrasions on her chin and ear. Her glasses and purse were scattered in front of her. And the police thought it looked like she had been heading out the door when she fell. Heading out to the front door.
I'm going to guess they did a thorough investigation. Mm-hmm. They did all the forensic examinations that they could possibly do.
Mm-hmm.
Maxed out.
Max. Maximum. To the max. So Bridget was examined by a forensic pathologist, but they were new to the job and hadn't finished their training.
And they were also a dog.
Exactly.
The police force's first ever dog pathologist.
Yes. His if they were like,
if we could send him into space, if we could send a dog to space, mm-hmm. we can train one to be a forensic pathologist. We're mm-hmm. Canada's going to win the race to have the first yep. dog forensic pathologist.
Exactly.
That does sound like something the United States would do right now.
Totally.
Elon Musk's new
oh my God.
Space dog.
Oh no. I thought you were going to say Elon Musk's forensic pathologist dog.
And yes, both. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He doesn't want to let Canada get the jump on either.
No.
Well, is it Russia that sent, was it a dog or a monkey? Anyway.
Both a dog.
Both. I think it's a dog. Dog monkey. Right. There's a thing called a raccoon dog, right? Now we all know this about yeah. COVID came from the raccoon dog, which yes. very quick tangent. I was like, how could I be 43 years old and be learning about species of animals? And my wife was like, there's lots of animals you've never heard of. And I was like, that's impossible. Right? Like, no. there's no
you just
way
assumed I haven't heard, you'd of, heard all of all animals. Of them.
You know what I mean, though? Because I assume when I heard raccoon dog that they had, it's like a thing they made for pets or something. It's like, no, it's uh-huh. just an animal. I'm like, that's impossible. I would have heard of it. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Coming from the person who didn't know like half the presidents of the United States.
It's very different, Sadie. Very different. Nobody knows the presidents of the United States. Everybody knows all of the animals, right? We all know all of the animals. I was like, name an animal I don't have never heard of. So it was like capybara, heard of it a million times. I know exactly what that is. I don't believe it. I don't believe that I don't know all animals. I'm going to firmly stick to this for no reason. So listeners, if there's an animal you don't think that I know, please submit that animal because I am dying to know what animals I don't know because we this heard about actually blew my mind.
Pink water, freshwater river dolphins.
Yes, of course I have. Yeah. All of those things. Raccoon dogs? What? I would have heard of that by now. I jumped timelines. That did not exist on my previous timeline. I would have heard of it. It's too adorable.
All right. Well, now that we've got that figured out.
We haven't gotten anything figured out because the universe is too mysterious, which is exactly what the forensic department of this fucking police said. They're like, we could never possibly figure that out. And they're like, well, that's literally our job. And they're like, no, there's too many mysteries in the universe. She clearly just fell down the stairs and her Crocs mm-hmm. stayed on her feet mm-hmm. because that's how physics works. We know that much. No, guys, no.
No.
She did not fall down the stairs by accident. Pickles, the forensic dog, said.
Right. They found that Bridget had a broken neck and several broken ribs. She had bruising around her neck and petechial hemorrhaging on her face and eyes,
mm-hmm.
which are signs that are consistent with being strangled. So police interviewed Caleb, who begged them to interview Melissa and Chris. He explained the custody battle and the parental abduction trial they were going through. Despite plenty of evidence that Bridget had most likely been murdered, her cause of death was ruled suspicious, but not a homicide. This allowed the police department to decide if they were going to investigate her death or not.
Oh, my God.
They chose not to investigate.
Oh, my God. Pickles, you're a bad dog.
Mm-hmm. Bad dog. It's not. It is suspicious. And it's also a homicide. It's a suspicious homicide.
Yep. It's deserving of an investigation. That's the entire fucking point. If something's suspicious, it needs to be investigated.
Yep.
Then it becomes unsuspicious. It becomes knowledge and information.
Yes. It was also rumored that police believed Caleb was the one responsible for his mother's death. And when they learned that he had a solid alibi, they decided to stop investigating. When members of the Harrison family brought their concerns to detectives, asking them to continue their investigation, officers told them that they would have to bring them proof of foul play. So the family, hey, yeah, well, maybe, but you have to find the proof and bring it to us. And then maybe we'll investigate.
Chills. I can't do it.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
So Caleb was granted temporary sole custody of his kids, and Melissa could only see them during supervised visits. After his mother's death, Caleb slipped into a deep depression and started drinking again, but did his best to be there for his kids. As the years passed, Caleb started to let his guard down and even agreed to let Chris and Melissa take the kids for a week at a time. So they started rotating weeks, 1 week on and 1 week off. And by all accounts, Melissa and Chris were good parents to their blended family. Unfortunately, this temporary peace wouldn't last. And after Melissa and Chris's house burned down, they moved closer to Caleb, and the fighting started again. It got to the point where Caleb withdrew his offer to let Melissa have access to her kids, who are now 10 and 12.
Oh, those babies. No. No.
Like, their whole life has just been one fucked up custody battle, abduction, death. They called their grandma and grandpa Nana and Papa, which is what my kids call our parents. And it's just like, So they're 10 and 12, and Melissa was told she would go back to only having supervised visits with them. August 22nd, 2013 was the last overnight Melissa would have with her two oldest children for a while. Caleb dropped his kids at one of their baseball games, and Melissa brought them home after the game was over. At around 11 p.m., Caleb talked to his girlfriend on the phone. She said he sounded drunk, and he told her he was going to bed. 12 hours later, Caleb was found dead in his bedroom.
Ugh.
This time, Caleb's autopsy was performed by a fully trained and experienced forensic pathologist, and Caleb's death was ruled homicide by asphyxiation.
Thank God. Did they do anything about it, though?
Yeah, finally, they did.
Like, we're going to have to send this to our sloth department.
Right.
We're highly trained sloths.
Mm-hmm. They move it 2 miles an hour.
So this caused... still investigating it to this day.
Right. So this caused a domino effect, and 4 years after Bill had died, authorities were finally investigating a triple homicide.
Ugh. Got some Murdaugh shit, man.
Right? Luckily for investigators, they didn't have to look far to find their two prime suspects. I mean, they had it there the whole time. It's not like they ever had to do anything to figure out who did this.
The children got caught for the abduction. Did they serve any time for the abduction? Did you say that? And I just blacked out because I was still...
Not that I found. I don't know. I mean, I know that Caleb got full custody of the kids, but I'm not sure if there was any time spent in jail or prison.
Oh, my God.
And Melissa had, like, a bunch of other kids at this time, too. Like, she kept having babies. And so I don't know if that plays into, you know, she gets not to keep her two oldest kids but stay home with her others. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that should be the opposite. It's like you got all those kids, then there's more capacity to steal kids. You got so many kids.
Right, right.
More kids at risk of your shitty parenting.
Yep. So officers started following Chris and Melissa within hours of Caleb's death. They were able to pose as garbage collectors and take the garbage on the curb of Chris and Melissa's house and process it for evidence. They found a pair of men's sneakers with dog hair on them that matched the hair found in Caleb's bedroom. They also found a pair of latex gloves in the garbage. Caleb's DNA was found on the outside of the gloves, while Chris's DNA was found on the inside. DNA found under Caleb's fingernails quickly came back as a match to Chris as well. When they searched Chris and Melissa's computers, they found years worth of internet searches.
Mm-mm.
Things like, quote, what if grandparents has legal custody and they die? Legal custody and they die. If a grandparent has custody of the children and they die, which of the parents gets the kids? They found multiple searches for Bridget Harrison after her death. They also Googled how long it took for someone to die from being choked.
Oh, my God.
While police were compiling the evidence against Chris and Melissa, Melissa now had full custody of her kids, of she and Caleb's kids.
Mm-hmm.
And the family moved back to Nova Scotia with the hopes of being forgotten once again and allowed to live their lives as they wanted to without interference from Harrison's or police. But this hope was dashed in January of 2014 when both Chris and Melissa were arrested and charged for the murders of Bridget and Caleb. Bill's death was still under investigation because sloths.
Sloths. They ruled it a homicide, but it's they're still walking the papers to the courthouse.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It was reported that Chris was such a huge guy that they had to use leg shackles as handcuffs.
Wow. Oh, God. Ew. Yeah. Just imagining having this enormous man just trying to destroy your life and your family and everything you love. Is
and getting away with it for years.
Chilling.
After 13 hours of interrogation, Chris Vettori confessed to killing Bridget and Caleb. Before he told detectives what happened, he insisted that Melissa had nothing to do with the murders and hadn't helped plan them in any way.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Chris told police in April 2010 he went to the Harrison home with a note, pretending it was for the children. When Bridget answered the door, he forced his way in and attacked her.
Oh, my God.
Quote, I hit her a couple of times, he said. I then proceeded to squeeze her neck until she stopped breathing and laid on the floor.
Poor woman.
He killed Bridget because he thought, quote, it would level the playing field between Melissa and Caleb, giving Melissa a better chance to get custody if Bridget was dead.
What a psychopath.
Yep. He told police on the night of Caleb's murder, he snuck in the house with a key that he stole from Caleb's oldest child and had a baseball bat hidden up his shirt sleeve. He went up to Caleb's bedroom where he was passed out from a long night of drinking. Chris stood over Caleb, raised the baseball bat above his head, and hit him as hard as he could in the chest. Caleb woke up and tried to fight back, but Chris was much, much larger than Caleb and was able to easily overpower him. Chris said he threw Caleb into the shelves next to the bed, and when Caleb realized he was in deep trouble, he begged Chris for his life.
Oh, my God.
Chris then put his hands around Caleb's neck and choked him until he was dead. He then put him back in bed and covered him up with a sheet and left the house. Melissa and Chris would go to trial in September of 2017 on two counts of first-degree murder, and Chris would face an additional charge of second-degree murder for Bill's death. The evidence against the couple was shown to the jury, including hours of surveillance recordings and a three-hour conversation between Melissa and Chris at the Nova Scotia airport. Police left the two alone in a room while they waited for their flight back to Ontario after being arrested for murder. They believed they were alone and could have a private conversation, but of course authorities were recording them.
Oh, my God. Ugh. ugh, Caleb could have been so be alive. There could be so many people alive right now if they had just done 1 second's worth of investigation.
Totally. I mean, I think that poor Bill would have died. That should have been the end of it.
Yep.
And Chris should have been immediately arrested and put in prison for Bill's death.
Yep. Unbelievable.
After the police shut the door, they started talking. Chris told Melissa, quote, "I'm taking the rap for it to give you accessory after the fact." Melissa then says to Chris that his parents spoke to police. Quote, "They called me Carla Homolka," she said. Just worried about how his parents look at her.
Yep.
Prosecutors told the jury that Melissa and Chris had conspired together to kill the Harrisons, but it was Chris alone who murdered them. Either way, they should both be held accountable, and Melissa was still eligible to be found guilty of for first-degree murder. After 3 months of testimony and 4 days of jury deliberations, the jury came back with a verdict in January of 2018. Christopher and Melissa were found guilty of the murder of Caleb Harrison. Chris was also found guilty of murdering Bridget Harrison. Mm-hmm. The jury could not come to a verdict on the first-degree murder charge Melissa faced in the death of Bridget, and so the court declared a mistrial.
Wow.
In the death of Bill Harrison, Chris, who alone faced a second-degree murder charge, was found not guilty due to insufficient evidence. They were both sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole after 25 years.
Wow. Well, it's Canada.
Right. In an unusual turn of events, an early January of this year, 2023, the Ontario Court of Appeal overturned Melissa Merritt's murder conviction on the grounds that the trial judge, quote, committed significant errors in his jury instruction relating to key evidence. So her defense told the appeals court that an unintelligible statement made by Melissa to Chris while at the airport was used to secure her guilty verdict, despite it being too hard to understand. So it shouldn't have been used.
Right.
They also argued that the trial judge erred in instructing the jury about circumstantial evidence presented at trial. This was enough for the appeals court to overturn her verdict and order a retrial. This just happened, so we'll let you know what happens to Melissa as it unfolds. Wow. I think she's still in prison. I couldn't find that. I think she's still in prison. So those who knew and loved the Harrisons said that losing Bill, Bridget, and Caleb was like losing the glue that held them together. They have worked to hold authorities responsible for not investigating the death sooner.
Good.
And authorities launched an independent review of what happened and how they can do better in the future. It's something, but it's certainly not enough.
No.
After Chris and Melissa were convicted, Caleb and Melissa's kids were sent to live with Melissa's family.
What?
Despite Caleb specifically asking in his will that the kids go to his cousin if something happened to him. Melissa ultimately got what she wanted.
Oh, no. I hate it. I hate it so much.
And that is the unbelievably awful story of the Harrison family murder.
Oh, my God. Ugh.
Yeah.
It's just like we know this. We know that the system doesn't work. That's very clear to people listening to this podcast who have been listening to this podcast for a while. But sorry, the trash system in Michigan City is very good. but God, it just makes you feel so helpless and scared and freaked out and devastated that it's just so easy, just such an easy one. So it was not ambiguous. It was not mysterious. It was clear, concise as it could possibly be. And they still fucked it up. And those people, I hope they feel really fucking bad about it, but I know they probably don't.
No.
Ugh.
I know. So awful. Can we just stop killing people?
I mean, the more I think about it, the more I think we might need dog forensics, dogs just in general in charge of the system, because humans are too fallible. Humans just make mistakes, have bad days. They're humans, you know? It's like these are still human beings and we are trusting them to take care of us, protect us, give a shit about us. We don't know them. They don't know us. It's very strange.
It really is.
It's very upsetting. We pay them to not protect all of it. I don't like it. The more I think about it, the less I like it. And I would like to go to a hammock island, please, and thank you.
I know. Me too. I need Hammock Island. Oh, I hope the kids are okay. I hope they're just even like a little bit okay.
I know.
A little
bit. I know. Seems like I'm a big so hope, sorry. But you just never know. It's their path. It's for them to live and fucking survive that. But yeah, I am sending them tremendous amounts of strength and clarity and peace and healing and whatever they need to endure something like that. Because, oh God, to live in a house with a giant monster man.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-mm. And then to lose your whole family, like their mom, their stepdad, their dad, their grandparents, like.
It's so complicated and so traumatic.
Move through that.
Yeah. Yep. And then to, I'm assuming, still want to love their mother because she's their mother. Sure. And.
Yep. Yeah. The Harrison family and some of these articles I read talked a lot about how much they worry about the kids being with Melissa's family and what sort of stories they're told about the Harrison family, and just so sad.
So sad. Shit, man. Well, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
I mean, the only upside is that it's like 1 second's worth of relief of living in the United States.
I know. To know that we're not the only fucked up country. I mean, I know that, but like to have more proof that we're all in it together, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Misery loves company.
I know. No, there's significantly more fucked up countries than the United States, but we're doing a real good job of giving them a run for their money right now. So
that's right.
Yeah.
Yep. So well, there you are. That's it. That's all I got. Goodbye. Mm.
We've never needed name time more than we do right now, have we, people?
It's true. No, please.
And luckily, if we skip a week of name time, my God, then it is. I don't even know what the word is.
Smorgasbord.
Yes, but a smorgasbord. If it was like when you are watching a gangster movie and they meet up in those warehouse slots, the industrial parts of town where it's just shipping containers stacked on top of shipping containers, that's what this is.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yep.
It's name time. We're going to start it off strong with a couple of names of kids that Sadie and her neighbor friend Ashley have sent based on the softball or the baseball roster for this year.
Little League.
I mean, top 10 names we've gotten. Optimus Griffith.
Just get real.
Out of here.
Optimus Griffith.
Incredible. Second only to Abraham Spoon.
Yes.
And Dakota Van Arsdale. God. Yes.
That's amazing.
Amazing. I did a audition for voice actors and I got an Axe Norman.
Yes.
Fuck yeah, Axe Norman. You have to be a voice artist if your name is Axe. In County Durham, there are villages called Pity Me and No Place. That's the self-deprecation this world needs.
God, I love it.
Yeah. Right?
They're really good at that. Like,
I know. I had a conversation with my good friend who grew up in Indiana. He writes for The Daily Show now, so he's got a good sense of humor. And I was like, there's something about the Indiana sense of humor that is very unique to Indiana. And I was like, as I was saying it, I was like, it feels very British. Now that I know a lot about British humor and have watched, you know, British comedies and stuff. And he's like, I think it's probably because we are heavily colonized by the British. I was like, holy shit, you might be actually
right. Right? Totally.
Yes.
Makes total sense.
Right? It's just very sarcastic, very sardonic, very self-deprecating. And so, yeah, pity me in no place. I'm like, that also feels very Indiana to me. Okay. A Welsh town called Llanfairpwll Gwyn Gyllingori Chwery Nyrn Drob Walent Ys Ilio Go 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 Goch.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. Yep.
Where is this? What is that?
Welsh. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That's it's a so for much. Real thing. So many consonants. So many G's. Like an abundance of G's.
Wow.
Go, go, goach. Yeah, that's for real. I can't believe we haven't gotten that one sooner. Yep. Oh, there's another kid, Sullivan Necessary, who goes by Sully. Give me one huge break. Sullivan, already cute. Sullivan. Necessary. There's a primatologist called Dr. Barbara Smuts. Yep. Yep. Yesterday I was sitting next to my real estate teammate who has been a listener of the podcast. I think, I don't know if he's probably too busy, but I was like, oh shit, this guy's from Wax, Kentucky. And I looked at him, I was like, going on the list. He's like, yep, Wax, Kentucky.
Wax.
There was a New York Times article about Detective Coy Cox.
Oh,
you know, wow. I feel like maybe we've gotten this one before, but stunt double Dick Warlock came up again. And I think we all just need to fucking tip a hat to Dick Warlock.
That's amazing.
Amazing. Mitt Romney's great grandfather was named Parley Parker Pratt. This listener also went to school with Cody Brody, whose mother's name was Jody Brody. Oh. She said that was her married name, and so that means she chose that for herself and her child, wow. Which I, yes, absolutely.
I'm there for it. She's so smart.
Love a rhyming name. There was a Whitney Johnson, and guys would call him Whittle Johnson. He said it didn't help that his dad, Dr. Harry Johnson, was a gynecologist. Yes. God, sorry. They said, finally, I will never forget hearing a story about Officer Courtney Kane. they used the first initial and last name with no spaces, but somebody already had the same first initial, so she was assigned cocaine. Oh, God. Mr. Butts and Mr. Cocker.
No.
Yep. Same listener, Mr. Butts and Mr. Cocker were like clients recently. Okay. Dazinky Jinky is a name.
What?
Yeah. Dazinky Jinky might have to be our new queen. Cindy Pancake will always reign supreme, but Dazinky Jinky fucking just giving you a run for your money,
Lunches
Pancake.
It, right?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, God.
That's grandmother's amazing. Cousins, Ivy Green and Icy Waters. Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Yes. Wow. Yes. Somebody's name is Darthula and someone else's name is Belzora. And I need that level of fucking elegance and creativity in everything
Please.
In my life. We can do better. That is proof.
That's amazing.
Yes. There are boy-girl siblings, Erlyn and Lyric. Gorgeous. Ugh. Sisters, Eulalia and Xavier, gorgeous.
Wow.
Alta Gracia, gorgeous.
What?
Yes. Magnolia Jane, gorgeous. Island, Startavia, Victoria and Jolie, Treasure and Ebcity. I mean, once again, we can do better. This is proof. Yes. Gunner Death Rage on Project Runway. I was like, how did we not remember Gunner Death Rage?
Oh my God.
Yeah. Again, I'm assuming it's Death Rage or something, but we're going with Death Rage. Every time a Death Rage comes across my, yeah, Death Gunner Rage. Death Rage was on Project Runway.
Holy shit.
Yeah. There was a guy on Judge Judy called Chris Bumgardner. Yeah, tend to your bums out in your bum garden. Oh, okay. Here's the phonetic pronunciation of the Welsh town, which got away from, somehow I separated them. Chanvire Pool Gwyn Gilgor Gerich Ween Drob Ul Chan Tiz Ilio Gogo Gotch. I got the Gogo Gotch right.
Yeah, I was like, the whole time, I was like, they didn't give you phonetic.
I thought that they had too. Yeah, I was like, I feel like they did, but I just separated them on my notes app. Apparently, Macaulay Culkin changed his name to Macaulay Culkin. And if that is true,
he wins president. I'm voting for them.
Could not.
Overdone.
Support that harder.
Ruler of the universe.
Somebody went to high school with, his name was Richin Famous.
People are so smart.
So smart. There's an explorer named Sir Vivian Ernest Fox. Yep. And at various points in his life, he went by the nicknames Bunny and Papa.
Oh, my God.
Bunny Fox and Papa Fox was his nickname. Mm-hmm. Godmother's great aunt's first name was Ubaldine.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Hella Cock was the name. She said she was my absolute favorite person as a child, the only one I was always excited to see. She was also kind of a badass older lady living alone, traveling a lot, and always brought me cool stuff. She had the most amazing handwriting I've ever seen. I got a birthday card every year and kept them all.
Oh my God. Hella Cox. I need a picture. I want to see a picture of Hella Cox's handwriting.
Hella Cox is a fucking legend. Last but not least, the Aston Martin team principal. I don't remember where I saw that, but Mike, crack. Oh, let's all fucking just keep dizinky jinky in your fucking hearts as you move forward into this week and for and always.
And for always.
There was also a video. Just find it right now. Everybody pause this podcast and go find the video of Snoop Dogg coming off of a plane in Scotland and someone bagpiping his song to him, and he's crip walking to his song played on the bagpipes, and it is
magnificent.
It's magnificent. It's like everything I want the world to be in one little moment. I sent it to Mananya, my good friend, and I was like, doesn't this sort of represent our friend group? And she's like, yes, so much. Oh my God. Where do we go from here?
I don't know. How do we do this? This is it. We're done.
This is it. We should do a couple of those shouty outies that everyone comes here for. Yeah.
Once again, you can also get your own shouty outie. Join us over on Patreon for as little as $5 a month. You get one full ass episode every week.
Yep.
Over there. There's so many of them, like more than 140.
That's insane. To do it. Yep.
We're going to have a hangout with our Patreon supporters on April 7th as well.
Yep.
Sign up fast.
Who do we have today? Who do we have to thank?
Thank you so much to Colby M.
Oh, you got a name like Colby? You're not even sweating it. You don't even need a shout out. So next. Just kidding, but kind of true. I imagine if your name is Colby, you know how to drive a boat. I imagine that you know how to do algebra. I imagine that you know how to dress yourself effortlessly, but still very fashion forward. I imagine that you have a confident, self-deprecating, very British Indiana sort of sense of humor.
Yes.
I imagine you're the life of the party, but you also like know how to not overdo it for the most part. You overdo it sometimes because you should just to let loose, but not all the time. I imagine with a name like Colby, you fuck with gender in cool ways on occasion, right? I also imagine that you are the most supportive. You're a rock. And if you were murdered, they would definitely say that your smile lit up a room. But totally. Mean it. Like, for real, that's actually a defining characteristic of you.
Yes.
Good job, Colby.
You did it.
Mm-hmm. Colby's like, thanks. Driving his boat, their boat.
Their boat, yeah, going to the new bachelor, bachelorette, or gender neutral at show as the winner of the love.
Yes. Like Dom. I actually am kind of picturing Dom. If you all didn't watch Perfect Match, I was a fan of Dom on TikTok before Dom was on Perfect Match on Netflix, and I remain a huge fan of Dom. But Colby is definitely sort of a Dom to me. Just hot. You know, open about their struggles, but not defining them, etc. Just, mm-hmm. yeah, just that kind of person. Yes. The person we could all aspire to be.
Just like, thank you so much to Emily Kelly McClellan.
Emily Kelly McClellan, she wants to know where she's dwelling, but she won't tell you because she wants to keep it so nice because her taste is spicy. Her efforts are not dicey. They're sophisticated. They are also not dated. They are right on trend. What's her name?
Emily Kelly McClellan.
Emily Kelly McClellan. She wants to know if you're gelling because that commercial, you remember when they tried to make insoles a thing? Well, Emily Kelly McClellan does not need to be gelling. Her arches are perfect. Her face is also, and she knows how to sing. Emily Kelly McClellan, she may be a felon, but only because she wants to have a mugshot that's also a model shot, like that one guy who became a model after getting a mugshot. That's just like Emily Kelly McClellan. It's also kind of badass to say that you were a felon. And if you don't know, she is swelling with pride and glee and intelligence and attractiveness and power.
I'm taking it upon myself, FYI. If you don't want your last name shouted outed, let us know. If it's too cute, I'm just going for it now. So.
I think that's fair. Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to target our Patreon supporters for supporting us. Yes. Although some people do actively hate the shout outs. I don't blame them. It's me fully unmasking, and I know that makes a lot of people uncomfortable. It makes me uncomfortable, just part of the reason I'm doing it, to move past it. Uh-huh. So, but I don't think that they're going to actively.
Be like, oh, Emily Kelly McClellan.
She's in trouble now. Remember when they tried to make gelling a thing? You gelling?
Yes. Yes. That's so dumb.
Thank you. Okay, one more.
All right. Thank you so much to Joe Jones.
Joe Jones. And for more of Joe Jones, I'm jonesing for more of Joe Jones. I need to go to the Joe Jones store and get me a big pack of Joe Jones and then get some more and more of the Joe Jones, maximum Joe Jones in my bones. Joe Jones, come on around town, find him there and take him down to the Joe Jones town. Getting so much of the Joe Jones that you're gonna be powerful and not be worried about what the future holds because they're full of Joe Jones.
I like when you start going into Jack Black, Tenacious D territory.
It's honestly because I actually stopped paying attention, which is when you're writing or painting or you're doing creative things, it really, you do enter sort of a fugue state, but every once in a while I do that while I'm shouting out and I'm like, I don't know what I just said. I need to pay attention a little bit.
Don't worry. If it gets offensive or too weird, I'll let you know.
Thank you. Yeah, when I'm editing, it's remarkable how much I have to cut out of this podcast out of my own mouth. It's very rarely Sadie. It's like the last episode was a solid 30 minutes longer, and I just went through. I was like, oh my God. Yeah. Whew. Just letting it rip.
Oh, shit.
This is what happens when a podcaster learns about their nerdivergence 3 years in.
Shit gets weird.
Yeah. So thank you all
We had a whole episode at the end of one episode about Timothy Oliphant and his teeth and meerkats.
Yeah.
And, oh my God.
Oh my God.
Gold. So gold. If you like that sort of shit, get over there.
Yeah.
You gotta pay for it.
Yes. If you don't, you're probably not nerdivergent. And if you're listening to this and you're like, I'm not neurodivergent, but I love it. Well, get on TikTok, type in ADHD and talk to me in a month.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not a bad thing. It's not either. No. It's not a judgment either way, but it's just, it just is.
It just is.
So thank you guys so much for being here.
We love you so much.
Extremely endlessly. And if you want to spend more time with us, you can do so on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, at They Will Kill. You can go to our website, theywillkill.com, and you can always email us at theywillkillpodcast@gmail.com.
Yes, please. You can rate and review and subscribe to us, please.
Yes, please. And if you don't like the shouty outies and you don't like the dialogue at the end, don't review it. Yeah,
no,
don't. Or skip over it. We put it at the end. You know, it's like, I sometimes read them and they really hurt my feelings. And then I was like, you know what? If I read that about somebody else, I would not stand for it. So I don't need to feel bullied by that for my own self. You know,
not even for a second.
No, it's who we are. It's our literal personality. So if you don't like them, that's fine. Just move on with your life.
Just,
you know,
be sure to go on Apple and review the shit out of our shitty personalities.
That's so crazy. Like, I love the research. I love the cases. I hate them. I'm like, what? Great. Cool. Super
cool. People totally forget, like, we are actual human beings. Mm-hmm. Like, how they forget that, because we make it so abundantly clear that we're human.
Yeah. I wish they would actually shut up and do this podcast without talking. Great feedback. Thank you so much.
I know you've been doing this for 3 years and you have a style that is very specific to who you are, but you just stop doing that too.
Yeah. Could you do that for me? Oh yeah. You know what? Taking it all back.
Please take a minute and tell us exactly how you feel. Oh, you boy. Thanks, AJ. Hey, AJ Bergans, thank you so much for your music.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Very much.
And remember.
Okay. This is a question more than a statement. Anybody who was born in the, like, grew up in the 80s or 90s, did you have this, like, overwhelming feeling that, like, Dirty Dancing and the Lumbada was, like, going to be such a thing? Like, it was, like, a cultural revolution, and it was going to actually impact our lives in some tangible way?
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Because, like, it was so much at the forefront of our lives when I was, like, 7, 8 years old. Everything was Dirty Dancing and the Lumbada. And it was just like, I don't know what I thought the consequences of these dances were going to be. I mean, obviously Christians thought this was just like the gateway straight into like fucking sin and deviance. Yeah, but I just expected there to be more Dirty Dancing and Lumbada-ing in my future and currently.
Right.
You know, and then all of us like kids like grinding, quote unquote grinding. Do kids still grind? Do they just like rub their little like awkward pelvises together like we did? You know?
Yeah, we weren't allowed to grind, not like at schools.
No, people still did it and then they'd get caught doing it and they'd be told to stop. But then when I was like 20 and I'd go to the all ages club, we'd all, us little like queer kids, just be grinding on each other. It's like, that's what we just thought was dancing and that's just what we did. And like, is that still a thing or is that residual effect of the Lumbada and general quote unquote dirty dancing? Right?
Tell us, we need to know.
Yeah. Yeah.
My kids haven't entered like old enough dances yet in school to know.
I feel like kids now just dance. Like they just do dances and they're probably more hip hop influenced, I would imagine, but I don't actually know. Right? Yes. Not that people who are into hip hop don't grind. I just actually don't know. I just feel like it was something that we just did and we didn't really think about it and there was not ground like rooted in anything other than like Sally, Jesse, Raphael talking about the Lumbada and Dirty Dancing.
You know what we should do is like start an experiment right now with my kids and make them watch like nonstop Dirty Dancing on repeat and then just see how much their dancing at middle school dances differ from kids that are not shown Dirty Dancing.
I think that's a worthwhile pursuit. It's a good experiment.
Right? I think so too.
They're going to know a lot about women's reproductive health and the consequences of not allowing it. They're going to have a real strong opinion about
that. I mean, they
already
are going to have a strong opinion
about that. Yes, but that will drive it home because nobody wants to see Penny in so much pain.
No, she deserves actual health care.
Yep. We love you guys.
We love you.
See you very soon. See you next time. Have a great week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.